you been a beekeeper, Esther?
So I've been a beekeeper about 12 years.
Because I just wondered, because you're so knowledgeable about it and you speak so technically about it, and I know you've been doing it for 10 years, but were you ever interested...
12 years,
sorry. But, oh, all right. But we... At school, were you ever interested in biology?
Well, I did do biology. I knew about osmosis. I'm not a scientist. I like learning things through actually doing them.
Yes, well, that's the best way, isn't it? I was just trying to imagine you in school in a biology class and being the star pupil.
No, I wasn't really... the star pupil in many things, really, at school. But yeah, I did enjoy biology. I liked it. Miss Appleyard. She was related to Big Daddy, the wrestler.
Ooh, was she? I like him. And Haystacks.
Oh, yeah. So we're not going to go to the hive today, Jane. It's been very dramatic this week in the apiary. We started this podcast thinking it was all going to be straightforward, and it's the biggest drama I've ever had in beekeeping. So the inspector came back to, you know, assess the Italian bees,
yeah,
because he had to check them for this Italian hive beetle, which munches its way through the whole colony. Anyway, we didn't have the Italian hive beetle. But in my other colony, we've got this disease called EFB, European Foul Brood. Anyway, I was absolutely devastated. Anyway, I started crying. Aww. I was so upset because European Foul Brood is a disease that came in about 1970s. It's a bacteria that affects the gut of the honeybee. So if they, like, were to go into another hive and steal some honey, or a beekeeper might leave some honey out, you know, on a table or something like that, and a bee sucks up that honey, the bacteria gets into their gut, and then they go back to the colony, and then they start to feed the babies, the baby larva, and the bacteria gets into the gut of the larva. And it just takes all the food from the larva, so they can't grow into a fully fledged bee. The colonies work really hard, and if it's a strong colony, they'll actually take out the dead larvae and throw it onto the ground outside the hive. And they can actually manage this illness. And then in the spring, the beekeeper gives new comb, takes everything out, puts everything in fresh, and the bees usually fire up again and everything's fine. But I have noticed my bees haven't been brilliant, or they've produced honey the last 2 years and everything's been okay. But in the winter, they've sort of died off a bit. And I thought, oh, it can't be Varroa mite, because I treat them for that. So the bee inspector did the inspection and he confirmed that I've got this European foul brood. So we had to destroy the bees.
Oh, no.
It was a small colony. But we had to destroy them for the good of all the other bees in the area, because often when a colony starts to get weak, other bees from other areas might come in and steal honey and invade the colony. Mm. And then obviously they would then take the disease back to their homes, their colonies. My bees might have caught it in that way, because in North London, there's an absolute epidemic of this European foul brood.
Mm.
And it's the irony of it is that, you know, it seems so much like what we're dealing with as human beings at the moment. It's just so sad.
I mean, it kind of feels strange to me, because they're not, you know, like dogs or cats. They're not like domestic pets. But you obviously get very close to your bees and your colonies. And like you say, it's, you know, we as a human race are experiencing a similar thing, you know, with our pandemic. So it's weird that the bees, you know, are echoing what we're going through. So I can understand your upset on one level, because it's relatable to what we're experiencing as human beings.
Well, it is very upsetting. And, you know, if I could, I would have just brought all my bees home and put them in little beds and given them all a little drink and some little sandwiches, and I would have looked after them, but I can't do that. So the government says, you know, you have to destroy them. It's terrible what's happened. I can't believe it. It's just all gone wrong.
Poor US.
In a way, for me, this is an opportunity to be really educated about this European file brew, which I've been terrified of getting for the last 12 years because it's been in my area. And it's always been in with about 3 kilometres, which is fee flying distance. So I've known it's been in the area. And, you know, I've taken in swarms, I've caught swarms because swarms are great fun to catch. And in the early days, when I first started beekeeping, I never caught swarms, only my own swarms, because I knew about disease. But when I moved to this new apiary, I got a bit gung-ho and thought, oh, I'll catch swarms, I've got loads of space, I'm going to have loads of bees. And although my, you know, my cleanliness was all good, I don't know where these swarms were coming from. So I finally got the dreaded European foul brood. Well, I haven't got it, but my bees had it and they've been destroyed. And now everything, that the hive that they were in, is all being cleaned out with like a Bunsen burner, which I do every spring anyway. But because I've got these new bees, there's a possibility that they might have been infected with it. So in 6 weeks' time, the bee inspector's got to come back again. Because once you've had a case of it in your apiary, it's very, very difficult to get rid of. So you have to live with it. So it's a case of living with the disease, a bit like COVID-19. Flipping heck!
So when the inspector comes back, if he does find an incidence of it in the Italian bees, will he have to destroy them as well?
Not necessarily, because if they're a healthy colony and there's plenty of them, they should be able to clean out the disease larva. And then if there is a case of it, then it's not too late in the summer. I can refresh all the comb again, as I did, you know, as I do anyway at the beginning of the spring, but do it at the end of the summer. They'll build new comb, which sort of purges them as well of the disease as they build new comb, and then hopefully they'll be all right. But it's you know, this particular disease used to be manageable, but once it gets into an area where all bees in the area have got it.
So with the Moncons, why could they not have overrode this? And, you know, is it just because all the bees were affected by it? When you were saying about the Italians being a healthy colony, might there be a case that only a few of the bees were affected by it?
Because it was only a small colony, you know, these frames that we've seen in the hive, you know, it was about sort of 3 of those. So the Italians are on about 5 of those frames, but the Moncons were only on about 3. So the bee inspector, he said it's not worth trying to start afresh with these ones because there's not enough of them to sort of get on top of it. So he just said, let's just burn it, burn the comb and start afresh. So moving forward, I'm just going to be beekeeping in a new way, possibly with this disease.
So will you get another lot of bees for the other hive, or are you just going to concentrate on the Italians for now?
I mean, I would like another colony of bees, but I'm going to stick with the Italians for now. I've got to wait for them to get a new queen, which, again, is a bit stressful for bees at this time of year because they want to be cracking on with a full colony. I would like another set of bees, but they're ever so expensive, Jane. You know, it's about 200-odd quid for a package of bees. And if I'm going to be dealing with this disease, maybe I should just start small again from the beginning and let's see how we go with this. I'm not going to be defeated.
Well, I think that's good. I think it's good to focus on one colony for now, isn't it? Especially as there's a few issues going on in that colony.
They should sort themselves out. And the only other time I've had an accidental death of a queen like this is when a bee inspector killed her. About 10 years ago, I had a bee inspector came And she did an inspection. She was brilliant. And there was, my bees were all fine. And when I went back to the hive about 10 days later, there was no queen there and no eggs. And I counted back. I could work out what had happened. And it was the day the bee inspector came. So she accidentally killed the queen. So I've got to put my hands up and say, I think when I fed the bees some syrup the other week, the queen bee must have been under the bucket of syrup and I must have squashed her. And that's it. So I've turned into the worst. I feel like I've turned into the worst beekeeper in North London.
Well, you haven't. You haven't. It's just circumstance, isn't it? What sort of syrup do you feed your bees?
I feed them with sugar and water. And that's just a starting thing, just to get them going. Because, of course, really, they just want to have their own nectar flow. And that's the best thing for bees. So just when you first get a colony or a swarm, you just give them a little bit of syrup just for them to be able to get build in the wax. And that really starts things off.
It's just like a tonic for them, a winter tonic.
Yeah, but bees will eat anything sweet. I heard a story once about a beekeeper looked in his hive and all the honey was blue. And it turned out that the bees had been sucking the sugar off some blue Skittles from a factory.
Ooh, and were they hyper? Because the blue ones make you hyper, don't they?
Do they?
Yeah, the blue ones.
Well, bees are up.
Have you had some Skittles today?
Hyper. Oh, yeah, I've eaten 50 packets.
So I'll call you up whenever. Well, I would take a vote for letting nature take its course. Give this newly hatched bee, queen bee, a chance, I would say. Because if it doesn't work, you can still get another queen, can't you, through the post?
Yeah, I could. I mean, I feel my instincts are, you know, like I say, I'd reach for another colony or I'd just let nature take its course. Because like you say, if something goes wrong, we'll just deal with that and we'll see what happens with these little queens. And hopefully there'll be one that's good enough.
I think she will be.
She'll be all right.
I think you should trust Esther.
I believe in nature and I believe in bees. And in fact, you know, I think the Church of the Bees is the best one to be in. So now I've got you on board, Jane.
Well, Esther, I was thinking about my own hive and setting up my own hive, but you'll be glad to know you've put me off.
Well, I've put you off this week, but I think I can draw you back, Jane. I'm just convinced that you're going to enjoy it. And by the end of, you know, the next episode or the one after that, you'll be gagging to get in that bee suit.
Oh, I'm not so sure, Esther. I personally, because I've come in right at the deep end and I know what could potentially happen. Yeah, I don't know. I just think that you have to be really committed to do it. I think it's a massive commitment.
It is a commitment. But there's something so lovely about looking after things and helping them survive. And bees are so fragile in this world. They do need beekeepers.
Well, they need people like you. But do you think it's innate in you because you're a kindly person? Do you think that if you're not that type...
you
have rather a hard edge around you. And they're unfeeling and uncaring. Do you think perhaps bees aren't for you?
Oh, Jane, I think you'd be a lovely beekeeper. I think it'd keep you calm and, you know, you are a natural honeybee because you're always so busy.
Well, I'm a worker bee.
I think you're a worker bee.
Yeah, and I do like honey.
So this week I decided to invite a guest to come and chat to Jane and I about bees, and who better than my beekeeping teacher Alison Benjamin, who along with Brian McCallum set up Urban Bees to promote and educate about keeping bees in urban settings. Hey up, Alison!
Hi!
Hi, Alison!
Hi, hello!
Who are you, Alison? Where do you come from?
So I'm Alison Benjamin. I set up Urban Bees with Brian about 12 years ago or so, and Esther was one of our first pupils. I then got anaphylactic shock to bee stings, which was very unfortunate for a beekeeper. So I let Brian go off and do the beekeeping, and I got much more interested in the plants and all the forage for the bees. I'm also a journalist on The Guardian, and I've written a few books about bees to try and encourage other people to develop an interest in nature, really. I decided actually not to do the beekeeping anymore because I was a little bit nervous now around the honeybees. So I thought I'll let Brian do the beekeeping and I'll still be involved in bees, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Once I was working for Alison and Urban Bees, and I dressed up as a queen bee. But you weren't allergic to me, were you, Alison?
No, well, the queen doesn't actually ever use the sting on a human, does she?
No.
She only uses her sting to sting other queen bees. You never see a queen flying around because she only ever comes out for her virgin flight when she's mating with all the drones or if she goes to swarm. So she'll never be out on the flowers. You'll never see a queen bee out collecting any pollen and nectar on the flowers. The workers collect all the food for her. She doesn't have to do anything like that.
Yeah, nice life. Yeah. Well, not in Esther's case, not in Esther's hives. Under fear of death on a daily basis.
Yes, it's not been its usual, it's not taken its usual course of action. But bees can be very surprising, can't they? And they don't always do what you think.
Yeah, I mean, myself and Brian have written a number of books about bees, but we always say when we're teaching people that actually the bees don't read the book, so they're always doing really surprising things that you're never really prepared for. Mm. There's always something surprising, keeps you on your toes.
Alison, what sort of bee would you be if you could be any bee that you wanted to be?
I would have to be a hairy-footed flower bee.
Oh, what's that one?
Just because I love the name. The hairy-footed flower bee is a type of solitary bee, but she's quite round and fluffy, so she looks a bit like a bumblebee, but she's black all over, and she's got a really long tongue. And she flies around at the beginning of spring, sort of April time, and she flies around the comfrey. She loves comfrey, which has got these little bell-like flowers. And because she's got such a long tongue, she can get that into the tip of the flower and sucks out all the nectar. And she's just adorable because she's quite a good size to see. The problem with some of the solitary bees is they're so tiny that it's really difficult to see them, but she's a good size, like a bumblebee size. And she buzzes, she makes a loud buzz, and she sort of darts around a bit more like a hoverfly. And you can just spend, well, I can just spend hours watching her. I think she's really cute.
Aww. Oh, that's nice. What would you be, Esther?
I don't know. I was going to ask Alison because she's an expert. What sort of bee do you think I'd be, Alison?
Oh, that's a difficult one, Esther.
Would I be an unusual bee?
Yes, of course. Well, I'm just thinking about a bee I just saw in my garden today, the wool carder bee. She's very dramatic looking. Ooh. She's quite big like the bumblebee, but she's more sort of slender. And she's got a black body, but she's got these little yellow markings on the side of the abdomen, which makes her quite striking. There's a plant called the lamb's ear plant. I don't know if you know that one, that has very velvety, soft
leaves. Yes, fluffess. Mm. Yes, I do know, fluffy. Yes.
Yeah, and it's
a bit like sage.
Yes, that's right, but fluffier. Mm. And it's got lovely purple flowers about this time of year. She comes and she collects some of that fluffy stuff from the leaves. Ooh. And she collects it into a little ball. And she flies away with it to her nest, and she lines her nest with this fluffy stuff. And she's another solitary bee, so she lines her nest with it, and then she lays her eggs. And so I don't know if you would be a solitary bee, though, Esther, because you are
no. Esther's not. She's not a solitary bee. I think you've got to think of something else for her, Alison.
Yeah, maybe. But what about a red-tailed bumblebee? They're quite striking. What do you think about that?
I don't mind which bee you choose for me, but I do like the idea of the one who goes on the lamb's ear because I really like a nice, soft, cosy bed. And I like that, yeah.
No, but you wouldn't have any friends around you. What would you be like? You'd go out of your head.
I would actually, yeah. So,
Well, the one thing about solitary bees is even though they're solitary, they often make their nests next door to each other.
Ooh.
So it's a bit like us. It's a bit like us if we're living in a block of flats or in a street and we are friendly with our neighbours, but we're not actually living with them. So you wouldn't be completely on your own, Esther.
Oh, thank you, Alison.
I don't know if you want to mention at some point.
Yeah.
Do you grow herbs on your allotment, Esther?
Well, I grow marjoram, mint, rosemary, lavender, chives, parsley, thyme.
All of those are great for bees, aren't they? If you let some of them flower.
We can definitely promote that.
Because that's an easy thing for people to have in the garden, isn't it? As long as people let a few of them flower, then the bees will be happy.
Lovely.
Brilliant. Lovely.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
thanks, okay. Alison.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. I love you too. Bye.
Well, thank you for this week, Esther, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Oh, yes. I hope you have a very nice week, Jane. It's such a joy to see you in these lockdown times.
And I love you.
I love you, Ducky. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye. Queen Bees is written and created by Esther Coles and Jane Horrocks. It is produced by Claire Broughton and Andy Goddard and partly recorded at the Hives on my allotment near Crouch End in London. Our title music is Sweet Nothing by Amy Mae Ellis and Will Cookson. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Queen Bees Pod for pictures and videos from the Hive. Queen Bees is a Hat Trick podcast.